Hello and welcome. My name is Ted Yeomans. I am the founder of Family Building, a professional law corporation. I started practicing 32 years ago and have practiced exclusively in the area of adoption, guardianship, and foster care cases over that period of time. The types of cases that Family Building handles include all types of adoption, including independent, agency, foster care, infant, toddler, interstate, relative, guardianship to adoption, as well as step-parent adoption, adult adoption, re-adoption, and even disrupted adoption. And disrupted adoption, typically kids that have been adopted abroad or from the foster care system, and they are just not doing well in the current placement. We're involved in finding new placements, new homes, new adoptive homes for those children. We are going to limit this recording specifically to newborn adoption or independent adoption, or what I also call as voluntary adoption, where a birth parent or parents are choosing a specific adoptive parent or parents to place their child with. If you are calling or contacting Family Building from out of state, we can work with you as long as there is a connection in your case with California. For instance, the birth parent or parents reside here in California, the child is born in California, we can represent you and proceed in that adoption under California law. If you are from out of state and you locate a birth parent in another state other than California, then typically we would not be involved. However, we want to be a resource to you. We want to encourage you to adopt, and we want to connect you with resources from across the country. I want to, at the beginning, mention the website of the Academy of Adoption and Assisted Reproduction Attorneys. We call it, it's four A's in a row. The website is adoptionart.org. That's adoptionart.org. The Academy of Adoption and Assisted Reproduction Attorneys is a nationwide group of attorneys that have been vetted in the sense that they have a certain amount of experience, they've applied, and they've been accepted to this national organization that has annual conferences, has a code of ethics. We are also members of the Academy of California Adoption Lawyers. That's ACAL, ACAL.org, which also has a listing of attorneys and resources here in the state of California. However, the concepts that I'm going to be speaking to you briefly here, an overview, really do apply whether you're adopting in California or outside the California. I'm passionate about sharing truths about adoption. I'm passionate, and we are passionate at Family Building, about encouraging you to adopt. An overarching perspective that we have is that there is a hurting world. There are broken generational lines, if you will. Birth parents who unfortunately did not have the benefit of a good two-parent loving home, like you are and what you would like to present as a resource to a birth parent. And that will be a theme that we really stress here, as well as throughout our representation of our clients. But there is really a broken and hurting world out there. Birth parents don't choose adoption because things are good in their life. And so one of the big principles and truths that you must embrace in order to really have a good experience in adoption is to really embrace that broken world. So these kids are coming from what I call third and fourth generation scenarios. The birth mother is typically a third generation child, meaning her father may have left her. Her parents may have been addicted to drugs. She may have grown up in foster care, but there is a certain level of dysfunction and hurt in her life, or in their lives, the birth parents. They didn't wake up one day and say, hey, you know, I want my life to be this challenging or this broken. And so there is an empathy that we want to acknowledge right up front. And I think if you can grasp that empathy, grasp the reality, it's going to make this process better and easier and give you the correct perspective as you go through it. One of our goals at Family Building is not only to get a child or children into your home, and we know those kids are going to be blessed and loved like no other home than a home like yours. But the other goal that we have is to see a restorative justice come to the birth mother. And what we mean by that is that we leave her in or them in a better position than we found them. We are going to strive to give them resources and to come alongside them and minister to them and build them up and give them a vision for the future of this child, where they're going to be able to, in a sense, see that child grow up from afar, maybe, but social media updates, but they're going to enjoy the fact and be rewarded, if you will, for the fact that they've made a good choice for their child. So that's a very good perspective that we believe that you need to grasp as you move into adoption. We want you to have hope. We believe that you will adopt. We believe that if you don't give up, if you stand in the gap, that generational gap, and you believe that there is a purpose behind your adoption, and we totally believe that because we've seen it with every child we've ever seen placed in these great homes of yours. The truth is, there are too many children in the world that need you. There are really not enough adoptive parents. That is probably one of the biggest myths or lies or mistruths about adoption. We have huge numbers of abortion in this country each year. We have close to 500,000 children in foster care. We have grandparents and extended relatives who, you know, weren't planning on raising the next generation, but they've had to step into that gap and rescue these children. And if they had a better option or would have known of a better option, such as you, they may have in fact chosen that adoption. We take in cases where for unfortunate circumstances where the parents may pass away suddenly. There's just all kinds of circumstances that lead to the need for you to be standing in that generational gap. I've kind of coined the phrase over the years, you don't know what your adoption is going to look like until you enter this process and jump in full of faith. But we really believe here as a principle that your adoption is purposed. We acknowledge that many of you come to this process from a place of hurt and pain, some from the struggle of infertility, just a host of reasons that have led you here. And if you've been through that pain and if you've been through that struggle, we do empathize with you, and we have been, ministering to and loving you guys where you're at and trying our best to understand that position that you're in. But one of the most fulfilling questions, and especially the answers that we get when I go to court and we're finalizing the adoption, I love to look at you and ask you, does your journey at this point make sense? And virtually 100% of our clients say, yes, now it makes sense. However, when you are going through it, and you may still be kind of in that valley, the shadow of death, so to speak, but that valley is a short valley, and there is a table set at the other end of that valley, and we can see that, and we believe that you are going to be successful in this process. You're going to build your family, and you're going to go out and restore a broken world through adoption. We really honestly believe that adoption is the most effective way to restore and to better a broken world. So it's this generational perspective that we hope that you can gain. And if I can establish this filter going into this process with you, again, it's just, it's going to give you a healthy attitude. It's going to give you a hope, and it's going to give you a steadfastness and a faith throughout this process. And we just ask you, just don't ever give up. I want to cover some real basic myths about adoption. The first one, when I ask couples over the last three decades, what percentage of birth parents do you think change their mind, or birth mothers change their mind about placing the child for adoption? And I've heard the average over the years of about 25%. We don't want you to misunderstand the truth. That is a big myth. We have found that less than 5% of the birth mothers change their mind about adoption. And let me just give you a little bit of insight that I have learned. From the moment that she finds out that she's pregnant, she begins to assess her options. If she decides to not abort the child, that's great. That's her first decision towards life and or towards adoption, even though she may not say adoption. We believe there are literally thousands of decisions, mini decisions, micro decisions, if you would, which are daily, just reminders of where she is financially, emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. If she has other children, if she's got children in that are currently in foster care, or they, that those are all factors that they are considering constantly. So the decision to place their child for adoption is not just made at the hospital and there's this sense that, oh my gosh, when she sees the baby, everything's going to change. But she has contacted us. She's contacted an agency. She's been going through paperwork, filling it out. She's been looking at prospective adoptive parents, meeting them, connecting with them, sharing personal information, signing waivers of confidentiality to share medical and other personal and otherwise confidential information. So there is a process. And even if that process happens very late in the pregnancy, it's still a decision-making process that began much before that telephone call, even if that call comes to family building right from the hospital. So that's a bit of our perspective about why such a small percentage of birth mothers change their mind. Another reason is the average age of birth mothers. When I've asked this question, most people think she is approximately 19 years old. That's not accurate. The vast majority, or I would say the mean age of the birth mother, is about 28 years old. And the average expectant mother or birth mother is already parented or has already birthed, on the average, about 2.3 children prior to choosing adoption. So she understands the cost and the responsibility of raising other children. In some cases, as I mentioned, they may have lost that child or previous children to foster care. So she may not even have an opportunity to parent that child because she's lost her parental rights previously. Again, another reason why such a small percentage changed their mind. The average age of adoptive parents, most adoptive parents think that is in the middle to lower 30s. In fact, the average age of adoptive parents is about 42 years old. That curve gets very steep, going up at about 40 to 41 years old. And the glut of adoptive parents tends to be right in that age of 40 to 43. The curve, the bell curve, tends to be a little bit thicker, if you will, or that age tends to be more often that you see people in their middle 40s or even up into the age of 50. Much more than you see age 30 years of age or in the 20s. In 32 years, I think I've represented that I can recall about 5 couples that were in their 20s, which again has always been astounding to me. But that's just the truth about adoption. Another truth is what I call this post-adoption surprise contact, this inherent fear that every adoptive parent has that someday a birth mother is going to, or birth parents are going to knock on their door at 10 o'clock at night and ask for the child back. As I sit recording this message to you, I don't recall that ever happening. Now, we do have contact after adoption agreements. Those are discussions that we've been having for, 30 years in adoption. Really not much has changed, other than there has been a greater acceptance of the written contact agreements, and just kind of laying out some boundaries. Like, we would like, the birth mother says, hey, I'd like to get updates, a few times a year, or, I'd like to be friends on social media, or I'd like to, when I ask, I'd like to, if you could text me some pictures. Very few adoptions are actually signing up, or there's an agreement pre-birth to actual contact, physical contact. And especially with social media today, I mean, with FaceTime, with so many other applications where people can actually go see each other face-to-face, those can be utilized too. The permanence of adoption is one of those myths that we got to talk about. It really is permanent. We don't see adoptions getting set aside once the birth parent signs. In California, for instance, and this is pretty similar across the U.S., that the birth parent, once they sign, that is a pretty permanent situation. When I say pretty permanent, let me explain. California law, in an independent adoption where the birth mother is privately placing with you the adoptive parent or parents, she has 30 days to revoke that placement. If she is independently advised by her own attorney, that attorney will ask her, would you like to waive that 30-day period? 95% of the birth parents decide to waive that period of time. They don't want you worrying. They're very serious about this. They're that 95% or more. They want this to go through. There's circumstances in their life. They've thought through this. It's not a joke to them. It's very serious. And so they, in about 95% of our cases, signed that waiver. That waiver, when they sign the placement agreement, and that's at or about the time that you are being discharged from the hospital with the baby, if it's a newborn adoption, that waiver becomes permanent and irrevocable under California law the next business day at 5 p.m. So we see very similar laws across the United States where there's not a long period of time that they have to revoke their consent or their relinquishment. So adoptions really are permanent. Now that's before you get to, that's even long before you get to the finalization of the adoption in court. That takes approximately 6 months because there is a built-in post-placement observation by the investigating agency that is just making sure that the child is bonding, that you guys are happy, that everything in the home is going well, the child is medically developing normally, etc. And so that's built in, that's a post-placement sort of automatic, and you see that pretty consistently across the United States. There are a few states and a few circumstances when you can finalize sooner than 6 months, but that's about the average time, and it could go 6 or 7, 8 months. But once that decree for adoption is signed, that is a permanent adoption, and virtually it's been permanent, or final, since, hours or, a few days after the child was born. So we don't want our clients worrying throughout this period. It's just a major myth. And we tell people, listen, it's really just wasting your time to worry about it. Let's enjoy and love that child. One of the other things I want to talk about is, it's a big myth about adoption, something we have fought against for years, and that's the cost of adoption. The myth that it's going to be $30,000 or more. Now, can you pay that in adoption? Yes. But I would suggest to our clients, find an attorney in your state, or, the attorney, if you're, again, if you're going to be a client of Family Buildings, we can be your attorneys here in California because we are going to locate a child, say, in California. But find an attorney that can vet any situation that comes to you. We're going to be talking about outreach in a moment here. But once you find that attorney, that's not going to cost you a bunch of money, and it shouldn't. And if it does, you should find another attorney. But they are going to be there to consult with you, to know to know you, maybe to retain them, become their client, or at least a prospective client when a situation arises. Once that attorney is in place, that attorney is going to be able to refer you to the most effective, least expensive, best agency that they are aware of. And trust me, every attorney that's a member of the Academy of Adoption and Assisted Reproduction Attorneys across America, or ACAL here in California, including myself, I know most of the agencies in California. There's no client that said, hey, Ted, that's come in historically and said, hey, I want to spend as much money as possible in an adoption. So I believe you find the right agency at the right cost and have an attorney ready to go, and then decide whether you want to spend money on outreach or paying a facilitator or an expensive advertiser. I don't believe that you need to do that. So you have very little invested and you are really legally ready to go. You've gotten a home study from a good, credible agency that's inexpensive and effective. You've got an attorney ready to go. Now you're doing outreach. Now you're kind of moving into this world in crisis, and you're going to have two advocates that have legal that are legal entities that have licenses at stake to advise you through this process. So if you do it that way and you don't spend the big bucks on advertising and facilitation and these other groups out there that are not attorneys or agencies, you're going to see the cost of your adoption be inexpensive. At Family Building, our goal, if we lay out the core costs of your adoption, and those would include, you know, your counsel, the agency, an attorney for the birth mother, there's usually an additional social worker, and there might be but for Family Building, we want there to be support services for the birth mother. If you add up those core foundational costs of your adoption, you're well under $20,000. The adoption tax credit, which is extremely important that you investigate, if you are grossing roughly, and it changes each year, under $200,000, you are going to be eligible for the full tax credit, which is just as of 2020, just above $14,000. So if you're in that ballpark, you're under $20,000 on your core foundational costs of adoption, you're going to be doing almost a free adoption. I mean, you have to put the money out in order to apply for the credit and get the credit back, but real money and real out-of-pocket costs when it's all said and done, you're doing a very inexpensive adoption. The variables that you're going to see in your adoption are including the birth father and whatever issues might be in regards to the birth, related to the birth father, and birth mother living expenses. Now, living expenses for the birth mother are going to vary from state to state. California is fairly liberal in birth mother living expenses, so depending on when she contacts, you know, the agency or you locate her, we typically have found that she is contacting us and making a serious adoption plan on the average in the late 7th month or 8th month of the pregnancy. So if a birth mother is early in her pregnancy, you make a plan with her and she needs living expenses, it could be more costly. But those are your two big variables. If you're spending an inordinate amount of money on an attorney and or an agency, or and I really emphasize this, a facilitator or an advertiser, I think you need to look further. You do not have to spend a bunch of money to do an adoption. So that's just a real quick overview on costs. I believe you can do adoptions very affordably. We get this question, can the grandparents, the biological grandparents, do they have rights? They basically do not have rights. Again, your birth mother is on the average, she's in her later 20s. She could be even in her 30s. She's not going to be that swayed by one of her parents. However, we see that when birth fathers, in the roughly 5% of adoptions where they actually legally oppose the adoption, typically that is a grandparent's push or a grandparent's influence on that birth father to object. A real quick statistics on the birth fathers. about 10% of the birth fathers in our adoptions, unfortunately, it's a low percentage, are actually, you know, involved with the birth mother, supporting her choice. Maybe you're going to be there at the hospital. We'll have a chance to meet you. It's a pretty low percentage. Approximately 80% of the birth fathers you probably will not meet. Of that 80% who are really not actively emotionally involved in supporting the birth mother, of those, there is a percentage of those that's pretty appreciable percentage that may be unknown to the birth mother. She just doesn't know who the birth father is. In California, we file a petition to terminate his rights after the child is born and the adoption petition is filed. There is another category of birth fathers whose identity is known, but their whereabouts are unknown. And again, that's an appreciable percentage of that roughly 80%. And then there are those birth fathers, alleged fathers, who are known, their whereabouts are known, and for all these birth fathers, we're required to give them notice. In that small percentage of birth fathers where we, or smaller percentage where we know where they're at, we give them notice, and they have a 30-day period to actually, you know, go to court, file a paternity action, and actually object. Again, that percentage is about 5% in adoption. However, birth fathers, you know, are a little bit more dynamic issue because we're not physically engaged with them. They're not signing documents. They're not meeting with us. They're not involved in and sort of bonding with you like the birth mother is. And that's unfortunate. We really do strive to get more involved. I want to speak briefly to agencies. It's very important as a prospective adoptive parent that you hire the right agency. Again, if you follow our advice by contacting an attorney, the attorney is going to direct you to the correct agency. But let me give you some terminology. In the agency world, there are public agencies, so your county agencies that will home study you for, say, foster parent cases. There are private foster family agencies, or what's called FFAs, foster family agencies. They're now more recently being referred to in California as RFA, or resource family agencies. But these private agencies are, again, licensing or homesteading you for foster care cases. If you spend all of the time getting one of those home studies, RFA home studies, you are committing really to adopt out of foster care. If you follow our advice and tell your world and your sphere of influence that you want to adopt, you have a huge number of advocates out there, and you are very likely going to locate a birth parent that wants to place with you privately or voluntarily or independently, but outside of foster care. So for that reason, we highly suggest our clients hire what we call and what is referred to in the literature as a full service agency. That is an agency that can do a home study, that would work for as a foster family placement if you want to work in the foster care system, or you can be home studied through that same agency so that you can do a private agency adoption or use that in an independent adoption where the birth parent is placing directly with you. But you will have a home study, a written document typed out, something you can hold and possess and use. Those home studies typically are good for 2 years. There's some variance in from agency to agency. If you are doing an interstate adoption, your home study has to be less than 1 year old, or no older than 1 year of age on the date that the birth parent signs their consent or relinquishment for adoption. There are also private adoption agencies that don't work in the foster care system. Those agencies are great if your focus is to do a private or voluntary adoption. Those agencies are great. Because we have done at Family Building a lot of foster care advocacy, so too, you may be thinking your adoption, remember, you don't know what it's going to look like exactly. You may think, I only want to do a voluntary adoption. I don't want to foster to adopt. I hear too many crazy stories in that system. And trust me, most of our clients say that. However, as soon as you say that, you may have an extended relative or some friend of an extended relative who has access to or knows of a parent that's just lost their child to foster care. So we prefer our clients to be with an agency that can help them with that foster placement, if that's what God has in store for you, is to adopt through the foster care system. But consider that in California, when it comes to home studies, I think every prospective adoptive parent thinks they have to be home studied before they can receive a child. So if you're hearing this and you're in the state of California, you reside here, and your birth parent locates you in California and she or they are in California, it's an all intra-California case, you do not have to have a home study in order for you to go to the hospital and bring that baby home. Again, if you follow our advice and you have access to an attorney, we would immediately make a hospital plan and we would help you get set up in that independent adoption. There is a requirement under California law that a private social worker called an adoption service provider meets with the birth mother. There is a period of time that needs to pass, a 10-day period, before the mother can sign her consent or placement agreement. But big picture right now, the point is with home studies, you do not have to have a home study if your birth parent and you are both in the state of California. So the point is, if you're hearing this recording and you're on fire to adopt and you really, your heart's desire is to adopt, begin to tell your sphere of influence right now, your world, all the people that love you, people on social media, that you want to adopt. And all you have to do is call an office like our office or any other legal office in the nation, no matter where you are, and ask for legal advice and how to do that, and we can help you do that. In terms of the benefits of getting a home study, we really encourage every one of our clients to get a home study right from the moment that they're entering this process. Here are the basic benefits to that. Your agency that is homesteading you is an outreach opportunity for you. They may locate a birth parent. A birth parent could come to them. Most agencies in this state tell you that they are not really doing outreach for you, but again, that could happen. As they're doing your home study and now that you're on their home studied list of home studied clients, it expands your outreach automatically to all 50 states in America. In other words, if you locate a birth parent outside the state of California, or again, if you're outside the state of California and you locate a child here in California, you now can do what's called an interstate adoption. You can comply with the Interstate Compact on Placement of Children because you have a home study. There's another benefit of having a home study is that as you adopt a second child, the relative cost of a second home study tend to go down. Another advantage to having a home study is that if you are adopting a child where the birth parent is, or that child is at risk of the dependency system or the child protective services system or the foster care system, lots of terminology there, are going to intervene into that child's life. In other words, the birth parent, the birth mother, has an open child protective services case with another child. It legitimates you with that county social services agency. If they check in on what's going on at the hospital, we as your advocates love to be able to show them a home study saying, hey, our clients are legit. They've been vetted. They've been home studied. Here's their fingerprint clearances, child abuse registry clearances, etc. Also, a big benefit that we have been advocating for of late is the possible access to or benefit of adoption assistance or adoption subsidies. If you have a home study, and therefore we can do your adoption through that agency, which is called an agency, a private agency relinquishment adoption, then we have the chance or the opportunity to at least apply for adoption subsidies or adoption benefits for you. And those benefits can be very substantial. They are virtually identical to the benefits that you would receive if you're adopting out of foster care. Again, well, you cannot even apply for those if it's an independent adoption unless the child is pretty severely disabled. So again, if we have a homesteaded couple, we have the option of doing the adoption through the agency, and we may want to apply for AAP. Things to look for in that is the child at risk of dependency? And the child could be for lots of reasons. Was there prenatal drug exposure? Was there homelessness? Were there other sort of risk factors during the pregnancy? And those are what we advocate in order to apply for AAP. There is a lot of birth mother background information that we receive before you match. And that term match is a term of art that I have come to appreciate. And to me, it's defined as when you as the adopting parents have every bit of information that you need in order to make a fully informed choice. In other words, we see a lot of adopting parents, prospective parents, hiring facilitators and advertisers around the country, and they introduce you to a birth mother and they say, oh, you're matched. You know, pay us this fee if you haven't already paid the fee. Well, that is not a match. We need to go through and vet issues related to the Indian Child Welfare Act, the birth father or birth fathers that have been alleged, and laws related to that. We've got to look at the birth mother living expenses. We've got to look at a lot of other things that are going to have a legal impact on this adoption. And just something that facilitators or social workers, even at agencies, don't appreciate. The birth father issue is probably the biggest issue or biggest variable that you're going to deal with. I know there's a lot to consider in adoption, home studies and all the stuff I'm talking about, but I will tell you that if you could just sort of quiet the noise, your birth mother is going to go forward with the adoption. If this is a good match, if you want to work with her, it's going to happen. We see that statistically. We have faith to say that. The birth father, however, tends to be a little bit more of a variable. Again, very few ever legally contest the adoption, but that's the biggest issue that we spend our time on as lawyers. That's what we've seen over these last 30 years. The California Supreme Court standard asks this question. This is the watermark that he has to meet. If, again, less than 5% legally object to the adoption, but if he were to object, it would be his burden to show that he promptly came forward and demonstrated a full commitment to his parental responsibilities to the unborn child and the mother from the time that he knew or should have known about the pregnancy. He has to demonstrate that he provided financial, emotional, and the Supreme Court says, and other, like physically involved. Was he harassing her? Did he give her rides places? Was he there ready to pay insurance? Was he really stepping up to be the kind of father that we all expect fathers to be? So again, very few alleged fathers. When a birth mother has gotten to the place where she has decided to call an office like ours or an agency or is reaching out to you privately, she's already come to conclusion that he's really not that person. So that's why we see such a success rate in those cases. In terms of your identity in adoptions, it's going to be disclosed. In an independent adoption in California or in an agency-identified relationship, the birth parents are entitled to know your information. I think in this day and age, just to really summarize this point, there should be almost zero expectation for privacy of any real, viable fact about your life. it's going to be known by the birth parents, and you're going to know all of their information. The information that you receive from them is extremely confidential or extremely private. You're going to get into all of their medical background, their personal background, their generational background. You're going to have access to their social security number, ultimately, their telephone numbers, their parents' names, their children's names, other children's names if they have them. And so there's not that level of disclosure with you, but in terms of having your names and knowing where you live, again, remember that there's no surprise contact. They don't show up at your house trying to steal the child away. Never happened. They love you. They have entrusted a child to you, and they're very serious about you raising that child unhampered by them. In terms of birth mother support or birth mother pregnancy support services, you should expect, if you're working through Family Building, and I would hope if you work through any other agency, that there are really viable, tangible, identifiable services and support and counseling and encouragement and coaching that go into the birth mother's life. Our goal, again, is to see them in a better place and to achieve some degree of restorative justice as a result of dealing with us professionals, you as kind, loving, stable people. They should be in a better position when they're done with this adoption. And I'll tell you the real walk-off sort of grand slam that we see is you see the child developing just wonderfully with you. You guys are so fulfilled raising him or her, but you see the birth mother's life change. This was sort of a crossroads in her life. And because of additional services that we're able to provide, counseling and encouragement, wisdom, knowledge, understanding, you know, the way a family really should look like yours, not to sound judgmental, but she's going to look at you and go, wow, that's what I've always wanted. I just never had a chance to even accomplish that because of my life and the brokenness in it. But that's a very big factor for what we do in adoption and how we do adoptions. The relationship between the birth parents and yourselves during the pregnancy, we promote that. We think that connection is vital. That doesn't mean that you guys have to become best friends, but we want her to have enough opportunities to understand your empathy. And again, if it's really about her, and you really appreciate what I'm talking about in terms of her restoration through this difficult process and placing a child, that connection is really important to her. We don't want to intervene and kind of stand in between you and block that relationship. One revelation that we've come to over the years is her biggest takeaway from this adoption is to see your fulfillment, to see your joy. Now, she's not doing it because she gets a few months of living expenses or, you know, some coaching, although that's amazing, but she wants to see your joy. And your joy is going to be a joy that she has provided to you through a gift. I call it the law of the harvest. You know, it has to come back to her. When you give, it is given in good measure back. It is just a universal scriptural law. And we really see that happening. And when you see that happen in her life, that creates a much more positive and a very restorative generational picture or story for your son or daughter as they grow. And we think that, you know, clients that we've seen that are, you know, this child is 15 or 18 or 25 or 30 now, for these kids to grow up in your home knowing how much you care about their birth parents, that doesn't make them want to go run back into their arms. It just answers all the questions that they have about their birth parent growing up. And when those questions come up, the answer is there. And they're going to know that the condition of your heart as you sort of download that information about the birth parents. We talked a little bit about post-adoption updates or contact after adoption agreements, or another term you're going to hear in adoption is post-adoption contact agreements, or PACAs. They are being used more. I want to give you one example that we saw recently. There was a PACA entered into because the birth mother wanted and understood that she didn't want any updates. She didn't want to be contacted on social media. So there is this sense that the birth mother is always asking you, but the one of the truths about adoption is that it's not the birth parents that are sometimes overstepping, I'm going to just say boundaries and be honest, it's the adopting parents. And they're not doing it out of, you know, ill will, but they're doing it because they are overflowing with joy and thankfulness, and they want the birth mother to know, you want your birth mother to know how well this child is doing. But sometimes she, you know, has privacy interests too. We had a case where one of our adopting parents, the birth mother, friended them on Facebook, and they had a number of friends, and they were just, again, you know, oozing or overflowing with gratitude, and they identified the birth mother to the rest of their friends on their social media, and it just horrified her. And she contacted them immediately and said, I didn't want that. You know, this is a very private, you know, affair and private decision. And they felt horrible that happened. So we're just trying to lay out some boundaries. Today, there's just so much in social media and so many ways to contact. We just want to lay out a realistic plan, like, when would you like updates? And I tend to default to deferring to the birth mother instead of sort of mandating or just saying, this is when you're going to get them. Let her come to you and ask for those updates when she's ready for them. And again, very few contact agreements after adoption include physically getting together. And we just don't have problems in this area. We've talked about the adoption tax credits. Please talk to your CPA about that. That's a very, very good benefit to take advantage of. I'm going to start wrapping up here by just suggesting to you that the first step in adoption is to consult with an attorney, get a good recommendation to the most effective agency, and then start doing outreach. I would suggest that you do outreach either through a non-expensive resource. For instance, we charge $3,500 to be on our list, which is relatively speaking inexpensive compared to a lot of other avenues out there. We do spend a lot of time doing outreach and putting your profile together and work hard to really match you with the right situation. But I would rather that a couple not retain us initially to do outreach, but that they would consult with us, get with the right agency, start getting that home study together, and immediately doing outreach to your sphere of influence. I believe in this so strongly, and let me tell you why. I believe that we have a responsibility to assist or to make this world better. I know that the strategic placement of a child into your home is going to change not only your lives, not only the child's life, but every life your son or daughter touches, as well as their family and their children and your children's children's children. So it is a generational sort of explosion from a numbers standpoint. And from that perspective, it's world changing. And so you have so many friends who love you. You have so many friends that would love to be a resource. And I challenge you to consider just thinking about your own life, your own extended family, your own, your relatives, and maybe those extended relatives. There have been unplanned pregnancies right in your own family. There have been abortions right in your own family. There's been drug addiction. There's been kids taken into foster care. And I'm not saying that that's where your look or your outreach should start, but it could start right there. And every one of your friends has this same story that if they begin to just think for a moment, they're going to start remembering, oh my gosh, yeah, there's this and there's this contact and that contact. And So I think number one, we have a responsibility, all of us, including you that are listening to this, to offer hope to a broken world. And you are the answer. We believe that with all of our heart. And I'm not just saying that to give you a compliment. I really believe it. I believe that you are the best parents, better parents than I was, you know, because it didn't cost me initially to be a biological father, not like it has cost our clients in the process and the pain sometimes that you've gone through to get to this process. And when it costs you that, it just makes you better parents. It's like the dross that comes off of a metal when it's molten, and so you've been hardened and you've been in a good way. You've been chiseled through this process. We too have adopted. Our daughter Ryan, who works with us at the office, is adopted by us, and we had the great privilege to adopt her. But it wasn't because that was a great situation and a lot of happiness. There was a lot of pain, and she lost her parents and became orphaned right in our own family. So we have also fostered two boys in our family. We have taken in kids that are within our own extended family, and that's when I really had the revelation that really the answer is right under, you know, our feet. It's right on our street. It's right in our family. It's right in our neighborhood. It's right in our local church. It's right in the very friends that I have. So we really encourage you to consider consulting with an attorney, getting a home study, doing your own private outreach, and if you are in a financial position, and if you've exhausted all of your resources that cost little to nothing to do, then maybe you consider, after exhaustive research and a high recommendation from your attorney, maybe hiring a facilitator or an advertiser. But these are some of the high points that I would like to touch on initially. Consultations are long. I've spent almost 55 minutes here. But I think if you start with this basic information, this is going to start getting you down the road. I want to leave you with this thought. You are really the hope for a broken world. I want to ask you this question in closing. What have you been shown? What has God shown you growing up in terms of what your family looks like? How many children have you dreamed of having? And whatever that answer is, I believe that in faith with you, that that's what your family is going to look like. And I want to take you one step further, because I thought I knew what our family was going to look like, and that was a very low number. Well, we're working on our seventh right now. And when I say working, it's through adoption. It's adult adoption. And so it's always going to be bigger, because we have a greater capacity to love than we can imagine. And so I've learned that. I've learned it personally. My wife Cheryl and I have walked through it with our children, and I want you to experience that too. I want you to experience more and greater than, not less than. We don't want you to give up. We want you to be encouraged. We want you to be proactive. We want you to reach this broken world. I'm telling you, adoption is the best thing happening in this world that restores a broken world, and we would be honored to assist you in this process. Go to our website, send us the contact form if you'd like to consult further and look into adoption further, and we look forward to seeing you successfully adopt and build your family. Take care, and thanks for listening.